Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. In today's society, there are many questions that trouble the Muslim community and in a sense hinder our spiritual development. In these short and upcoming discussions, we shall aim to tackle these issues with the hope of shedding some light on those areas that are usually misunderstood. Today's topic shall be the topic of Hajj, i.e. pilgrimage. With us today, we are honored to have Sheikh Mustafa Ja'far, along with the panel, myself, Rada Al-Khazaji, Brother Ahmed Darwish, and Brother Taha Adil. To start off with, Sheikhne, how does the pilgrimage of Umrah differ to that of Hajj?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Umrah and Hajj are two different rites, as you would say, you know, the actions. Hajj is prescribed for a certain time, right? It has to be in the month of Zilhajj only. From the 9th of Zilhajj, when one leaves Makkah to go to Arafat and then stays in Arafat, then goes to Mina and so on. Now, these are Hajj. Umrah is where one enters Makkah and performs the Tawaf of the Kaaba and then Safa, Marwa, Sa'i and then Taqsir. All this is Umrah. In Hajj, of course, we do Umrah, Tamattu and Hajj, Tamattu as well. But these are the main differences, that Umrah can be done any time of the year, whereas Hajj can only be done at certain place at certain time.
Sheikh, can you give a brief description of one how one is performing Hajj?
Well, when one wants to perform Hajj, the actions that start from are from beginning. You have to wear ihram at the right place, and then you perform first going to Arafat. Now we're talking of Hajj, we're talking of Umrah. You go to Arafat, you stay on the 9th of Zilhajj from Zuhur up to Maghrib. Then you leave for Muzdalifah, you stay in Muzdalifah on the 10th of Zilhajj from dawn to sunrise, just that window, dawn to sunrise. And then you go on the 10th of Zilhajj, you go to Mina, you hit the biggest shaitan. There are three spots where the shaitan appeared, right? And the largest spot, which is called Jamaratul Aqaba, you hit the seven pebbles there, then you slaughter an animal, then you shave your head off and you remove your ihram. That is on the Eid day, the 10th of Zilhajj. 11th of Zilhajj, you first of all, the night you sleep half the night in Mina on the 11th night and the 12th night. And then the 11th day and the 12th day, you have to hit the Jamarat. Once you come back to Makkah after these 3 days or during these 3 days, in Makkah you have to perform the Tawaf of Hajj, the Turakat Namaz of Hajj, you have to do the Safa Marwa of Hajj, and all this in 4 days. Is the climax of Hajj, where millions of people are in one place at the same time.
Sheikh, what is prohibited when one is in the state of ihram?
Well, there are a list of 25 things that are haram on a person in the state of ihram. One cannot put perfume, one cannot see his or her own reflection in the mirror. I could go on giving a whole list. No hunting, no scratching, no drawing blood, no removing hair. All these things are part of the things that are haram. But suffice it to say, Dr. Ali Shariat in his book Hajj explains that if you look at all these 25 or 27 things that become haram on a person in the state of ihram, you realize that this person is now like a walking zombie. He's a dead person, can't do anything, can't turn his face away from bad smell, can't appreciate good smell, can't look at his own reflection. But he's like a dead person wearing the ihram, which is shrouds, symbolic of shrouds, in the house of God. That's the essence of ihram.
When performing the qurban, is it wajib to slaughter an animal?
On the 10th of Zilhajj, it is wajib to slaughter an animal in Mina, right? And this is, if you refer back to the historical significance of the activities we do in Hajj, it is the time of Prophet Ibrahim and Ismail, that Ibrahim saw in his dream that he is slaughtering his son Ismail. And when he asked his son Ismail that this is the dream I have seen, Prophet Ismail said, do as you have been told to do, because dreams were a medium of instruction. Allah ordered Ibrahim to slaughter his son Ismail. So it is Mina where Prophet Ibrahim took his son Ismail and slaughtered him. Of course, Allah replaced Ismail with a lamb, with a ewe. And Prophet Ibrahim ultimately ended up slaughtering an animal. Now, that particular action is repeated by millions of Muslims every year in Mina. Of course, today Mina is so small, it can't even accommodate the 2 million people that come there. So the slaughterhouses, the abattoirs are constructed outside Mina, to which the jurists have allowed that because there is no space in Mina, we do it outside Mina.
Sheikh, now as you know, during the Hajj period, we wear the ihram. But when and where do we exactly put the ihram on?
Right, the rules regarding ihram are such that you cannot enter Makkah without ihram. You have to wear the ihram before you get to Makkah. The places that are prescribed from which you can wear ihram are called miqat. And these miqat are scattered around Makkah from different directions. So depending from where you come, if you're coming from Medina, for example, Masjid al-Shajara, which is just 7 kilometers outside Medina, is the miqat. From there, you must wear the ihram because you cannot enter the haram. And the haram is the area that is larger than just Makkah. From south, Juhfa is the area. So these different places are called miqat from which one must wear the ihram.
Sheikh, now I am aware that one is able to do the Hajj on someone else's behalf. How does this differ from doing the normal Hajj on for yourself?
Well, it doesn't differ. As far as the actions go, they are the very same actions that one would perform. The only difference would be in the intention. You see, in Hajj, if you're going for your first wajib Hajj, your intention would be, I am doing it my wajib Hajj. If you're doing it second Hajj, mustahab Hajj, or you're doing it for somebody else, like you said, niyabat, then your niyat would be that I'm doing this particular action, which is part of Hajj, for marhum fulan bin fulan, and that would be the difference. Otherwise, the actions themselves, there are no difference.
Now, when doing tawaf around the Kaaba, one must keep in line with the Kaaba at all time. Why is this? And also, does touching the Kaaba, does it abtul your Hajj? And also, if when you touch Hajar Ismail, is that part of the routine that one must go through?
Right. You're asking three questions here. Basically, if you look at the geographical location, the geographical position of the Kaaba and the Hajar Ismail. Hajar Ismail is the crescent that is between two edges, two corners of Kaaba. Hajar Ismail is not part of the Kaaba, but it is part of the tawaf that we perform. So when you perform the tawaf, you cannot cut through the Hajar Ismail, although there is space to cut through, to go around the Kaaba. It has to be around the Hajar Ismail. Of course, between Hajar Ismail and the Kaaba are buried Hajra, the mother of Prophet Ismail, a wife of Prophet Ibrahim, and some prophets. So when you do the tawaf, you are actually doing the tawaf of even Bibi Hajra, who sacrificed her son Ismail in the deserts of Makkah. Secondly, the issue of maintaining your left shoulder facing the Kaaba, this is a fiqh issue. It is a fiqh law that one must do it. Significance, the way I understand it, is perhaps you want to constantly, if you do geometry, I'm sure you remember geometry, you know, you put a compass and you're drawing a circle there, right? Now you want to constantly maintain that in that circle that you're going around the Kaaba, you are aligned with the Kaaba, you know. That is perhaps one significance I can think of. But otherwise, it's just a fiqh law that says your left portion must be facing the Kaaba at every time.
Right? What other things should one ensure when doing tawaf?
Now, there are other things that when you're walking, you're in the state of ihram, and you're performing tawaf, right? You should not touch. Most jurists do not allow. Some jurists do allow touching the Kaaba. But do not interrupt that round and round motion that you're going by cutting through and touching the Kaaba walls. You can touch the Kaaba walls outside Tawaf, that's no problem. You can touch Hajar Ismail or Hajar Aswad after finishing Tawaf, that's no problem. But during Tawaf, you remain firm to the Kaaba. And one of the main things is you raise your hand to Hajar Aswad. You know, Hajar Aswad is the black stone that came from the sky, the meteor as it is called. So you raise your right hand in greetings to the Hajar Aswad, as all Imams did when they were performing Tawaf.
Is it permissible to go on Hajj whilst owing prayer and financial duties?
What? You see, when you have a qard, that means a loan, right? This loan may be in terms of prayers. You haven't repaid your prayers. That would not restrict you from going for Hajj. You can go for Hajj with the intention that I will repay my prayers. But when it comes to financial abilities, if I have taken a loan from somewhere, then my duty is to repay that person before I use the money to go for Hajj. However, if that person allows it, or he doesn't mind that I will repay him after I finish my Hajj, then there is no problem in performing the Hajj.
How about loans like student loans and grants?
Well, student loans would come under the same category of loans. Hajj does not become wajib by borrowing money. Hajj becomes wajib when you have your own savings to be able to go to Hajj. Now, when you take student loan, you have surplus, for example, at the end of the year. You can do two things. Either you pay back the loan, or you use it to go to Hajj. Right? Now, here, it depends on the lender. If you have an agreement with the lender that you will use it solely for purposes of your studies, then you can't use it for Hajj. You have to give back the money.
Eid and the day of Arafah are not always agreed upon. So how can one differentiate in places such as Saudi Arabia?
Eid and Arafah are, of course, 9th and 10th Zilhajj, are not the same as the rest of the world. You find Saudi Arabia more often than not having different days, right? Then our own criteria of moon sighting would establish as different days. Some jurists, like Ayatollah Sistani, for example, gives it as ihtiyati wajib, that you have to do the Arafat and Eid according to the dates as your standards, not according to the standards established by the Saudi government. Now, it becomes very difficult. So he has done ihtiyati wajib, allowing us to refer to somebody else. Most Maraja allow us to follow the dates of the land we live in. If the Saudis have decided, now there is no way to have your own Hajj on different dates, because the facilities, the logistics of become very difficult. So most Maraja do allow this.
Regarding the recent construction of Jamarat, the expansion, for example, what is the duty of the pilgrim in these new circumstances?
The Jamarat, I remember up to 4 years ago, the Jamarat was just one pillar, 2.5 feet wide. And millions of people were throwing pebbles on that small pillar. Every year people used to die because of the rush on the small pillar, and 2 million people, just the small pillar. So the Saudi authorities decided to expand it to a huge wall, massive wall. What happens is people pass by and they're just throwing very leisurely. They don't have to target it to that small pillar. Not only that, the Saudi authorities have made 4 stories. So people go on the first story, second story, third story, ground floor. They've made a basement for cars. So those officials and VIP guests go by car, go down in the basement. Most Maraja, I would say it is the ground floor only. You cannot go on the first or the second floor. Although I know Ayatollah Nasir Makarim Shirazi, for example, allows the second and the third floor. This is their rule. Secondly, the rule is that you can hit anywhere on the wall because you can't know which is the exact spot the shaitan appeared. So you can hit anywhere on the wall.
Sheikh, and just following on from Taha's question, as you know, an alternative route has been opened for the pilgrims to perform their sa'i. Now, are there any new rules that apply to this?
Sa'i is from Safa to Marwa, right? And that is the walk between Safa and Marwa. Now, what has happened is that the construction, they are expanding. Because again, in sa'i, also in Mas'a, in the original place, there used to be congestion and people used to die, trampled. So what they're doing is they're expanding. They're expanding both wide ways and they're expanding height as well. They're making 4 floors of Safa Marwa so that people can do it at leisurely. Now the question remains is that whether this expansion is original part of Safa and Marwa or not. Most jurists up to today allow and say, okay, fine, it is allowed. You can, because it's part, there is no choice. You go there, Safa and Marwa. But some Maharaja say, no, you have to verify. Ayatollah Sistani is not happy that the expansion is part of the old Safa. So he says, you can't do Umrah there. You got to wait until they reopen the construction. They are, by the way, going to reopen this. And the expanded version will be reopened before Hajj, inshallah, this year.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. On behalf of the panel, we'd like to thank Sheikh Mustafa Ja'far for joining us and answering our questions. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.